It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, everyone. This is Raise Your Voice as part of the Fans First Sports Network. I am joined, as always, by my good friend and co-host, Darby Robinson. Darby, what's going on, man?
Oh, not much. Just enjoying the sweet views of Mark Topkin's iPhone 6 photos from spring. I think I made that joke last week and it was an iPhone 5. So he's getting a new iPhone every time I use this joke. No, the pitchers and catchers are reporting. It's great. All the uniforms are see-through and tissue paper. What's great? Everything is great in baseball. It's good to see actual players throwing actual baseballs, and you can just feel summer is around the corner.
Yeah, Yandy Diaz in a see-through uniform. I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that was the plan all along. There's a third box on our window tonight. Great friend of the pod. Actually was when I joined D-Raise Bay with Raise Your Voice. He was the first guest on that episode. We talked about our out-of-the-park baseball sims for the Tampa Bay Rays. He has gone on to much, much greater things than the Raise Your Voice podcast. But he's back here tonight. Jim Turvey of Action Network. Jim, what's going on, man? Nice to see you.
Great to see you guys. I'm just flattered you would have me back. Yeah, absolutely. This is you and I have stayed in touch about, you know, little tidbits here and there. And you mentioned the pod and possibility of you know, me hopping on. I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I'm bringing a little bit of degeneracy potentially to the podcast tonight. So you love to see that. But I'm excited to, you know, I'm regular listen every episode. So excited to see you guys and chat Rays and maybe even a little bit extra with you guys today. So
awesome. Well, we are going to talk. Jim mentioned it there a little bit. We're going to talk some sports betting. We're going to use that as a framework to kind of preview this Rays season. Vegas win totals are out. We're going to go over some futures bets that we like and also some other fun bets that are being offered by different books. But getting started right away, the Rays made another big league signing, something that I was not expecting. They bring in infielder Ahmed Rosario on a, get this, 1 year, $1.5 million deal. I've seen anywhere from like an extra $500,000 to an extra million in incentives, which still seems incredibly low for what the market was. But this time for the Rays, it looked like it paid off to just wait a little bit. And Ahmed Rosario on a guaranteed contract, Darby, like this caught me completely off guard. This wasn't even one of those moves that I thought something was coming and I didn't expect it was going to be Rosario. I didn't expect any moves to come. I thought we pretty much had the team set.
Yeah. I think we were even talking last time about basically like this, you know, seems like pretty much it with like maybe like the fifth starter role kind of slide it, you know, it really also throws a little bit of a very fun wrinkle in because this is a major league player, like a pretty good major league player, and as a super utility guy, kind of taking that Uslevis Basabe or Taylor Walls role, a huge upgrade in that spot, right? Like this is a guy, Rosario, for his career is absolutely mashed left-handed pitching. He's very athletic. He's been not good defensively at shortstop, but he has been able to be okay enough at shortstop for his career. Last year, I feel like the Rays are probably pretty comfortable, especially at this price, to just toss out last year, because that was a kind of like a career low in everything. It was his worst defensive season. It was one of his worst offensive seasons. It was just kind of a weird mess of a year. But this is a guy who has had a multiple win season several times. He's 1 year removed from being almost 3 Fangraphs WAR and 4 BRAF WAR. Like this is a guy who's a pretty darn good major league contributor, somebody who can give you solid average defense at second base. He can fill in at shortstop, and he can even do a little bit of the corner outfields. This is like a fantastic late kind of, or early spring, you know, just at the start of spring camp type of move to get him onto this team and kind of just keep the depth moving, right? He pushes everybody down one rung and makes that fight for the roster a little bit harder for some of those younger prospects. But that's a good thing when you're a team that's wanting to compete.
Yeah. It kind of solidifies the roster even more than we already thought it was, because like you said, there's another, you know, there's less spots on the bench now. Yep. Rosario and Caballero, I think Caballero, he's got all three options, but he is kind of a solidified big leaguer now. Not to say that you couldn't send him down, but that's not why you traded Luke Raley.
Defensively, he's also just so much ahead of, yeah. Like, I don't think the Rays just are not a team that I feel like would be comfortable having Rosario start at shortstop day in and day out with what right. He's shown in the majors. I think he is somebody you may feel more comfortable starting. Like, we've been talking about Curtis Meade as a potential. So I feel like that's already like a huge jump up from that. But yeah, I think Caballero's still got a really solidified role on this team.
Yeah, when Eric Neander is like going out into the media and saying, yeah, Curtis Meade might play shortstop for us, maybe we should have known like something else is coming. They're not going to let this happen. Curtis Meade, who doesn't even have the arm or the range for second base, is definitely not going to play shortstop for the Rays.
He's been working out. The best shape of his life. Remember that.
Maybe. So not only did they sign Rosario, and I want to talk a little bit more about Rosario in just a second, also brought in another old friend, infielder Yu Chang, on a invite to camp, minor league deal.
Yeah.
Like when they made that move before they signed Rosario, I'm sitting there thinking maybe Yu Chang sneaks his way onto this roster and serves as that infield utility man like he did once upon a time for, I don't know, a few weeks, however long he was with the Rays. And then they go in and sign a big league short or infielder again. Rosario probably going to play more second and corner outfield, but might be the direct understudy to Caballero to start the season. The only concern I have about this move is I was hoping that this would be the year that we would see the big step up from the Curtis Meade and the Jonathan Aranda. And Aranda, I think, still has a place on this team and will get at-bats early on in the season. I'm hoping it doesn't hamper the development of Curtis Meade. But this also could be the Rays saying, Curtis Meade is nowhere near the finished product yet, and we don't want him to really struggle in his first year in the big leagues like we saw with, I don't know, Josh Lowe, Taylor Walls, who knows what's going to happen when he comes back. It does make things interesting and make spring training a whole hell of a lot more interesting.
Yeah, I think one thing I see this move, and we've said it before, but it really does also feel like you kind of slot him in almost like as a Harold Ramirez replacement with Ahmed Rosario, guy who hits left-handers just as well as Harold Ramirez does. Harold has a little bit higher floor when it comes to that bat, but you also could see the Rays looking at that bat, that extremely weird profile of kind of low power, high contact, crazy high outside of the zone swing percentage, low walk rate, just kind of this like, this is a terrible process, but it works for Harold Ramirez. But how long will that work? How good can that do? Especially when he really does not have any defensive value outside of DH. He's basically a DH only. Rosario, you could have him at DH, but you can also play him at second base pretty comfortably. You can see him at short and corner outfield, you know, basically breaking both of the lows and the lows. It does feel harder to see, like, if you also are bringing in Aranda, I think he does still make the team just from a left-handed bat. You really go, do you want Harold Ramirez? Does he have that big value? Or do you want like somebody like Richie Palacios, who's also a left-handed bat? It's going to be some interesting camp. Yeah,
the edge goes to Palacios with the positional versatility right now.
Saying it though, and you know, until Harold Ramirez is traded, he's still like good enough that you could see him on this team at least for the start of the season. But it's still like, I think we're both in the same like heavy doubt that he is long for the Rays, but I don't know.
All this is doing is strengthening the roster for my Durham Bulls to open the season.
That's true.
I've already got opening day circled on the calendar. I'm very excited. But let's, Jim, I want to get you involved in this conversation. And one thing that I think this Ahmed Rosario signing does for the Rays, and I want to bring in this question from Luke Williamson, who is a longtime listener of the show. Are the Rays infield options maybe their deepest ever? Deepest, that's a possibility. Strongest, definitely not. I think they lack the talent on the top end for their infielders, obviously being without Wander Franco, who was going to be projected to be their best player again this year. But it is deep, and I think bringing in Rosario raises the floor of this team. And Jim, we started talking about this a few weeks back when those Vegas win totals started to come up. The Rays sitting at 84.5, I think, at most books right now. And it feels low, right? This is a team that made the postseason, has made the postseason for five straight years, won 99 games a year ago in a tough division, didn't even win their division, but won 99 games. Yet they come in with a pretty low win total for a team that is a perennial contender. What were your first thoughts when you started looking at these Vegas win totals and you saw the Rays sitting at that number?
I mean, my first thought, I literally messaged you. I was like, am I crazy, or does this seem like it is way far off of what I imagine it should be? And I was even more confused because the initial move, where the Rays came out at, it actually went down. The very first move was down. It went down to like 82.5, and now it has gradually come back up. And I think it is going to continue to go back up in that direction. But you know, we were kind of chatting during the day today, kind of looking through, like, it kind of feels like the Rays always outperform what Vegas, you know, sets for them at the beginning of the season. It's not just a feeling. So we looked it up here, and you know, bear with me as I read off the phone here. But in 2017, their preseason win total from Vegas, 78.5, they cleared that at 80. 2018, it was 74. They blew that out of the water at 90. 2019, it was 84.5. They blew that out of the water at 96. Even 2020, that shortened season, the 33.5 was a big number. They blew that out of the water at 40. The only year they missed was 2021. Sorry, one more year that they blew out of the water. It was 86.5 before the year. They totaled 100 wins, obviously. Now, the only one they missed since 2017 was 2022. They set at 89.5. They finished at 86, but then last year, again, they were 88.5, blew out of the water at 89. And actually, Darby, I'll throw it to you real quick, because you even had context for that one year they missed in 2022 that I thought was very relevant to the conversation as a whole.
Yeah, because we were looking at this, and it's kind of wild, right? Because they like cleared the over by the next closest was by 1.5 games in 2017. Everything else is like by 6+ games, which is significant. Except for 2022. And I look back at that season because I really disliked that September. It was a very miserable September for the Rays, because I think we all kind of remember it was sort of the team. They had a lot of injuries. They kind of were like, they played very good the start of September. They got kind of to their win total that they were pretty much comfortably in with the expanded postseason. And then they go into a battle against the Yankees in the Bronx, a 4-game set. They pretty much needed to sweep, because this was the last time they were going to face them, to have a chance at the division. And they would have still left New York, I think, down a game or maybe a game and a half. So they would have been really close, but close enough that you can still want to put the pedal to the metal and try to compete. They won the first two games. They have Corey Kluber go out for that game, game three. He gets absolutely shellacked in the first inning, just gets clobbered. They end up losing that game, I think, 10-4. So it was kind of a blowout. The next game, I believe, was they called up Luis Patino. I don't know if he was still on the team or if he was. It was sort of basically kind of a bullpen day. They did not really try. I think with that Kluber loss, that was kind of a big blow. And they pretty much at that point, to me, I think sort of signaled not a white flag, but a let's take in the sails. Let's not run this too hard. Let's try to get healthy for the postseason. They had Luis Patino go out there. He just got left to die. He 3 runs in the first, 7 runs in the second. just a brutal, just chew some innings, see you later. And they lost those two games. They lost the ground they gained. Pretty much, it's a fact that the Yankees have the division title. At that point, with three wildcard spots, there's not a whole lot of difference between wildcard one and wildcard three. And the Yankees, with them winning the division, getting that bye week, I think the Rays were really prioritized. They weren't losing on purpose. They weren't throttling back, but they were basically saying winning and getting injured or not getting healthy is worse than just trying to run it out. They ended up going well under below 500. If they basically go 500 from that point, they clear the over with ease. But I think they potentially rightly chose to throttle it back. They ended up with the third wildcard spot with a, at the time, seemingly much more beatable Cleveland Guardians. As we know, they scored one run in two games, actually technically almost three games, because that second game was an 18 inning torture fest, which was ended by Oscar Gonzalez, who's no longer there. And the first game was ended by Ahmed Rosario. Go figure. There's even context for the one time they haven't beaten it that sort of suggests that team wasn't an under. It was just the context of the situation that maybe led them to kind of throttle it back, which, you know, that's how they play the game. Vegas is still going to take that. That's part of it. But when you're setting those odds, you're probably not liking a team that's 20 games over 500 with about 3 weeks left to play, suddenly throttling it back to basically going 10 under 500.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Well, if I had to guess, you know, why this number seems a little bit lower than at least the three of us think, you know, we can get into why we think we like the over, but I think maybe from the Vegas perspective, there is the context of this division is really good. And you know, they have scaled back how many divisional games you have. So I weigh that a little bit less now. But when you pair that with, you know, Glasnow going out, being outbound, Wander kind of being outbound, and Margot, you know, I think it's easy to see a team that, you know, it is never a big market team in a division where, you know, now you got the Orioles owner who he looks like they're going to be going for it. I honestly think the Red Sox aren't even going to be terrible. The Yankees reloaded in the offseason. I think it's really easy for smaller markets teams to still get slept on a little bit on these, you know, these numbers didn't just open up. They've been open for about a month now, but it is easy to kind of sleep on some of the smaller market teams when I think the three of us, at least my perception is always that, you know, wins above replacement are not all created equal, right? That the R of WAR, the Rays have proven that they are better at R-ing that R, replacing those wins than any other team out there, basically. So, you know, even though there is, you know, you could make the case that there's maybe 10 outgoing wins, but this is a team that won 99 games and they were actually unlucky by base runs and injury warp. Now, injury warp, they're always going to be unlucky because they kind of run their pitchers in the ground. It's kind of what they do. But, you know, if we talk about base runs, that's a really good, you know, stat to look at. The Orioles were one of the luckiest teams. So if they're going to come back to earth a little bit, even if they have this, you know, really gung-ho owner who potentially is going to be, you know, calling up players earlier or flipping some of those assets into bigger pieces, I think the division alone is not reason enough for me to settle at a lower number. If you look at some of the bigger projection systems out there, Pecota's at 86.5, Fangraph's 85.5. I personally would have the Rays at a higher number than both of those. I have them in the high 80s. So I think you guys are with me on liking the over. I'm kind of curious if you like it as much as I do, and if you guys kind of have a number in your head that kind of stands out as what you would predict their win total to be this year.
I think I set, when I'm looking at a win total like this, I set like a range of possibilities. Yeah. You know, I think this team is an above 500 team. So if I set the bottom of my range at like 82, within, I don't know what percentage of probability, sure. Could they have a losing season? Yeah, it's possible. Things could go really wrong. But my range is somewhere from like 82 wins on the low end and like 99 wins on the high end, because that's what they were a year ago. 99 being like everything goes right, everyone stays healthy. So I think like 90 wins is more likely than 82, probably, just because they've done it so many years in a row. But if I'm looking at how the number can stay this low, even after such a strong year, the first thing that draws my attention, obviously, Wander Franco, right? Like, he was going to be an MVP candidate again this year. He's made his first All-Star team. Like, he had solidified himself in the big leagues. You lose him, that's going to hurt your team. Another team in your division, the New York Yankees, just added like a generational hitter. So, okay, that's not a great start. The biggest difference between last year's team and this year's team is the pitching. And the Rays are always going to turn over their pitching staff. Jim, like you said, they've been dealing with the injury bug for several years now. But the expected rotation going into last year was Shane McClanahan, Tyler Glasnow, Zach Eflin, Jeffrey Springs, and Drew Rasmussen. Only one of those guys is in the rotation to start this year. He's going to be the opening day starter. They haven't officially announced it yet, but that's Zach Eflin. And if a year ago, last year, you told me that Zach Eflin was going to be the only remaining guy in that rotation opening day 2024, I would be scared. But seeing how things have transpired, I am not fully confident in this rotation. That's why I think they're like in that upper 80s win. That's where I would probably have them, make 88, 89 wins. But I don't think they're a losing team. So you have Zach Eflin. You traded for Aaron Civale, a very high floor. That's kind of my theme here. The Rays have a lot of high floor guys on the roster this year. You know he's not going to suck. Zach Littell, I actually am not as high on Zach Littell as some others. I'm not convinced that he is a full-time starter. Ryan Pepiot, who was the big fish you got in the Tyler Glasnow trade, I think there's a lot of potential there, a lot to be excited about. Taj Bradley, who we all saw the stuff. He struggled last year, but he was a rookie. I think he's poised to take another step forward, and a number of other guys that are going to fill in. So Shane Baz at some point, but although it sounds like they're really going to take it slow with him, that's why they brought in Noyuki Uesawa, who I think might actually start the season as the number five starter or the guy that throws the bulk innings that day of the week. I think this rotation doesn't have a super high ceiling this year until you get the Springs and the Rasmussens and the Shane Bosses back. Like, you could go into October with Eflin, Springs, Rasmussen, and then you still have, you know, Bradley and Boz and Littell and Civale, like, as your who's going to make the team. Then it's great if everyone stays healthy. But for a large chunk of the season, I think it's a high floor, low ceiling, which is fine. It's steady because I think the other parts of this team are really strong. The bullpen, you basically run it back. You replace Bob Stevenson with Phil Maton. I think I like Stevenson more, but Maton's not a super big drop-off. And then everything on the position player side is basically the same sans Wander Franco. And I think they've done an admirable job trying to replace him. But I think they're really protected from injuries on the position player side. If Isak Paredes, who was one of their most productive hitters last year, if he goes down, Junior Caminero's his replacement. One of the best hitting prospects the Rays have ever had, probably only behind Franco. He might even be a better hitting prospect than like Evan Longoria, which is high praise, but he deserves it. And so I think they've got a lot of insurance on the position player side. Yes, if they have the same injury problems this year that they have in years past with this rotation, I don't know if they have the arms to cover those innings. Maybe that's where things go bad. But the other thing they've done is guys like Civale and Uesawa and Eflin have, knock on wood, had pretty healthy arms throughout their careers. They don't have these highly volatile guys like Shane McClanahan, who already had a Tommy John surgery, and Tyler Glasnow, and some of these other guys that you were kind of felt like they were ticking time bombs. Exactly. And so I don't know. I'm very comfortable with the floor of this team. And I think the floor is just under that 84.5 spot, which means there's a lot of instances and that this would go over.
I agree with that, with the idea that the floor is so close to that over underline that that's why I like the over, because it doesn't take a lot of things to break right to beat that. And I think that's when if I'm looking at kind of these type of bets, I'm looking at what's the most likely. It's kind of like how Pakoda kind of does their rankings. They have the like 90th percentile. Don't make bets on 90th percentile outcomes, because that's not going to happen. You also shouldn't look at too pessimistically either. You should kind of look in that middle range and what's the most likely outcome. And I think a lot of them end up on the overside. For me, I put this team because of, I think, the same reason why Vegas oftentimes undercounts the Rays is actually the same issues that kind of projection systems end up undercounting. It's not, again, like I always try to say every single year, like the projection systems don't hate anything. They are a cold, heartless computer, just like Vegas. They don't hate. They just exist. And I think the idea, though, that what could be missing, right? And it's one of those things where you look for, like you said, Jim, earlier, like where are some things that maybe might be missing? Like what's parts of the puzzle that might be missing? Is that the Rays top end is not going to compete with the Yankees, right? It's I think not going to maybe compete with the Blue Jays. I think it does compete well with the Orioles, who were very lucky last year. And that's why you see a lot of the Vegas odds and the projection systems kind of going way below what a lot of Orioles fans would like. It's because last year they saw a lot of noise and they hit a 70th percentile outcome, maybe even almost 80th in a lot of cases for a lot of those players. And they don't think that's going to happen again. They're still good, but there may not be division winning over 100 wins good. I think with the Rays, the thing is the top end may not be there. It's that depth that's just such a big strength, is that Aaron Judge and Gerrit Cole go down for the Yankees, and that team could swing 15 games in the standings. The Rays do not have a lot to, if they lose pitchers, they will be really hurt, but they still are a team that has more depth than they have top end. And that's hard to project because you are using that depth. Ahmed Rosario is a, 90 WRC plus type of hitter, but he's a 121 career hitter against lefties. And that's who he's going to face most of the time. So you're not seeing Rosario as a 500 at bat guy or a 600 at bat guy. On the Rays, he's a 400 at bat guy, maybe a 350. And I think that's something that's really tough to account for, is the Rays utilize their roster spots, all 26 of them, and then beyond with the Durham shuttles and injuries and replacements. So I don't want to say like better than other teams, but I think they do it so efficiently that it is really hard to project where they end up, because they are getting a little bit more out of that talent than a lot of teams do. And it's because their first baseman is not just a set and forget it. It's one and two people. It's the center field is not just one person. It's multiple people. It's the aggregate. It's the entirety is bigger. The whole is bigger than the sum of its parts. And so that's where I think the betting lines and the algorithms can sometimes undercount it. And it's to really no fault, because it's, I don't know how you would actually account for that all the way. But I think that's probably the big missing puzzle piece.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think one of the things I do tend to look for the most when I'm, this is a Rays specific setting, but when I'm looking across the league, the depth, because injuries, it's interesting. Projection systems that are so conservative sometimes, I have to laugh. Like we may mention his name later, but Jazz Chisholm, if you look at his like career, he's never played more than I think like 100, 105 games, something like that. He's projected for like 135 this year, because projections don't really do well with extremes, right? So if you have extremely health risk prone player, it struggles a little bit at times. And I think that it also struggles a little bit at times with extreme depth. I think it can tap into, the second, third, fourth guy on the bench, or you know, in the minor leagues. But I do think that the full depth, especially with the way we see pitching injuries occurring in Major League Baseball right now, I think pitching depth, pitching floor. I really like the point you were talking about, Brett, about a lot of teams, if they brought in the pitchers that the Rays brought in this offseason, I would probably not like them as much because I'm not a huge floor guy in general, but it pairs so well with the ceiling guys that they have potentially returning midway through the season that I think it really was smart of the Rays to go after some of these high floor, low ceiling. We're known for our pitcher injuries. Let's see if we can get this crew healthy to, like, you know, the July, August part of the season. Then we come in with the big guns right in time for the postseason. But those guys with a high floor, you know, I really do think that's a part of this whole process, I think is still missing a little bit, in to agree exactly with what you're saying, Darby, in both the projections and these Vegas win totals. And then just the final point that I think was really prescient, that Brett, you were talking about, you know, outcomes, right? And I think that is really important when you're betting the Rays to go over the win total. You're not actually it's framed as a binary, but really what you're betting is, you know, there's these, you know, you see over 84.5 minus 115. It, you know, the number just look, it's just numbers, right? But what it means is you're saying that at least 52.8% of the time they will do better than that win total. So it really is, you are working in these types of outcomes. And so you got to, like, price that into your equation of, you know, what we could look at, like, to make the playoffs. The Rays are about plus 130 right now. Again, just a number. What does that mean? It means that in order for you to win that bet, more than 43.5% of the time, they have to make the playoffs, right? So it really is, you're working in probabilities and you're working in, you know, what range outcomes that teams can land in. If you look at for the division, the Rays are plus 650. That means they have to win it about 13% of the time for that bet to make sense for you. So, you know, kind of thinking in that type of range outcome oriented mindset is really key when you break down some of these bets. And if you can kind of frame your brain to work that way, I mean, sometimes some of these tools out there, FanGraphs, you can kind of go and compare and see, you know, all right, FanGraphs has the Rays 20% to win the division. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, it might seem unlikely, but that's okay. That number you're getting, the plus 650, is saying it's unlikely. You just think it's slightly less unlikely. So that's just something to keep in mind as you're approaching. If people are doing Rays-centric stuff, you know, I think we're all high on them. So, you know, there's potential to bet them in a couple fun ways. So just try and frame the mindset of, you know, how you're thinking of it in terms of, like, implied probabilities and stuff like that, because that will really help. Instead of just firing out a random number because you like the Rays or whatever, it's always fun to try and think in that, you know, the puzzle pieces that we were talking about. How do they fit together, and what kind of outcomes lead to the Rays, a good season for the Rays, and at what likelihood do we see that happening at?
Yeah, the other thing I want to bring up is looking around at some of the other win totals around the division. I think the Red Sox are coming on at like 79.5, 80. The Blue Jays are coming in slightly above the Rays at like 86.5. I think that the Rays are better than the Blue Jays right now on paper, but that's why we play the games. Then the Orioles 90.5, and then the Yankees up at like 93.5. Those I think are pretty fair. You could say, like, the Orioles, you know, they definitely overperformed, right? That doesn't mean they're not a very good team that could win the division again this year. They are poised to do that, especially after adding Corbin Burns. That was a rotation piece that they really needed, although their depth is still questionable at best. But I mean, the Rays won 99 games a year ago. I don't see them as being 15 wins worse. I can't get to that. And not to say that you should go out and bet the over right away, right? Like I said, things could go wrong. If Eflin goes down and Bradley doesn't take the step forward and Littell struggles maybe with an injury because he's being stretched out to a starter for a full season, yeah, the Rays are going to be struggling throughout the summer. The other thing that they can do, I think, once they get a little bit more clarity where their pitchers are at progression-wise, is they could go out at the trade deadline. They're going to run out a team-high payroll this season. They have never had a payroll this high. They might have some more certainty by the time we get to the summer on what's going to happen with Wander Franco and the $200+ million that he is potentially owed. They'll know how far along Springs and Rasmussen and Boz are to getting closer to joining the big league team. And maybe they decide, you know, if the Rays are in contention, what they need is just one more top end starter to get into the postseason again. I trust the front office to do that. Eric Neander, he's not afraid to make the big move if he can get it at the right price and the right type of player. He obviously thought, you know, we all kind of thought, I think at the time, that Nelson Cruz might have been that guy. That one didn't work out. But they're not afraid to go after the big fish. And I don't know what the trade deadline market is going to look like right now, but I'm sure there's maybe the Orioles suck and they'll trade Burns again. And then he can get him. But I'm sure there'll be somebody out there, and the Rays have the opportunity to continue to improve this team. I don't know. I'm just, maybe I've got my Rays colored glasses on. Who knows? But I don't know. I'm high on this team. Darby, you have any other thoughts on the win total?
I think just in general, if I'm looking at like these teams, I see the Yankees as right now the favorites, but not a runaway favorite. I think they're a very good team. I think I like that rot. I like that bullpen. I like that roster. I like the rotation. I think they are pretty thin at rotation, but I do like the top end, especially if, I mean, you're asking a lot. You're asking Rodon and Cortez to be healthy and successful. And that's a big question mark. I don't think that should be just completely kind of sidestep, but I do think they are the favorites. I just see Baltimore, Tampa Bay, and Toronto as being kind of that next tier and not that far back. So when I see Baltimore at 90 and I see, you know, Toronto at 86.5 and Tampa Bay at 84.5, that's pretty close. I just don't see Baltimore as being that significantly better of a team. And I think that's a lot more risk to hit there over than, say, the Rays. I think all three could. I think the Red Sox are a solid tier below, but I also agree with you, Jim. Like, as constructed, the Red Sox are frustrating because I feel like clearly they should be better. They're being kind of run sort of as like a poverty franchise, but like they have one of the wealthiest ownership groups, but I think it's all going to Liverpool. And so like, I think they are more frustrating than they are bad. Like, I think they are a pretty solid team. Like, when that is the worst team in the division and they're probably going to be above 500 again, and you have Rafael Devers, who's like a perennial MVP potential candidate, that's a really good team. I just think their expectations are that they should be better, and that's why they seem to be so much worse. But I don't think they're that actually bad. So it is a tough division, and so that is a, I think a lot of things could happen. You already see the Orioles with the Kyle Bradish injury that he's going to try to pitch through. That's a massive blow for a team that has three starting pitchers that you trust to actually start. I think the rest of that rotation is well behind guys like Eflin. Like, I don't think John Means he's a name, but he is not a great major league pitcher for his career. And he's coming back from a major injury. So there are some really big question marks that I would see. Like, if you're looking at the Rays as far and away the fourth team, I think that 2 through 4 is very, very close. And I think I could see almost anybody in this division, aside from the Red Sox as currently constructed, winning this division at the end of the season. I think the Yankees definitely have the pole position, though. So I think that's totally fair to put them at the top, have them the highest rankings in projections, in Vegas odds. But I see some really interesting questions when you got high-level depth or high-level a talent versus that depth, and see which wins out on the 162 game sample. I mean, you only get to run it once. That's the thing, right? Is like Jim was saying, like you have how many outcomes, but you only get to see one of those per year. Like every, you know, you could see, this could be the long odds where and we see it every year, right? The Dodgers have a unbeatable juggernaut of a team. They will definitely win the World Series unless they get swept by like an 83 win, like NL Central team. Like that also is very likely because it's happened many times already. So that's baseball. That's what's so fun about it is that you can be like, yeah, this is the best assembled team. It all goes haywire, or this is kind of a mess of a team and everything falls right. And when you run a large sample, but only once, you get some weird results.
Well, and with betting, it's so easy to look afterwards and see an event happened and it either won or lost. So it was either a good bet or a bad bet. When in reality, you're working on margins, right? So like I mentioned, the minus 115 being 52 point whatever percent. So all you're doing, the raise over, the three of us like it, but we're not saying it's like a 80% chance of having. It's more like it's a 59%, 60, 65 at most percent chance of happening. But that's a pretty good gap. If you can get an edge on a book instead of them getting the edge on you, that's, I think, where, you know, we like that. We think it's a little bit more likely to happen than is priced into that number of happening. But it's by no means a sure bet. There, if you have a sure bet, you're the sucker. Like unless, yeah. Unless it's minus 15,000 or something, you know.
You heard it here first. No, the sure lock bet of the century. The Rays win total. The week. until next week when I have a new lock of the century. Another bet that I think I want to talk about a little bit is the Rays to make the playoffs, and DraftKings is offering it around plus 130. And I'll just lay it out maybe for those that aren't as familiar, even though no matter what network or however you consume sports media now, you're getting hit with gambling numbers. So when Jim says minus 115, basically what that means is a $115 bet would return $100. A plus 130 bet, if you bet $100, it would win. It would return 230. It would win 130. I think now that's kind of like betting lingo is just like in the American sports fans lexicon for now. definitely for better or worse. But I do want to talk about the Rays to make the playoffs at plus 130, which gives them implied odds about 43.5%. And the more mainstream projection systems like Pocota and like FanGraphs have the Rays with a much greater chance to make it. And this is a team that we're talking about has made it five straight years. And I think why I would like this bet is we just talked about how tough the American League East is, but Jim, you mentioned it earlier. They don't have to play him as much. You're only playing four series each against the teams in the AL East. You're still playing the same amount of games against the rest of the American League, which I know you got the World Series winners, the Texas Rangers there, the Houston Astros hanging out in the West, but there's not many other good teams in this league. You get to play Oakland twice. You get to play Kansas City twice. You get to play Detroit twice. The Mariners, Darby, I know, you know, you got your soft spot for the Mariners. They're not as bad as those other teams I mentioned, but there are opportunities to rack up a good amount of wins in those against those teams. You're also playing the National League, one series each. Every team in the National League, there are some better teams in the NL. But the fact that the Rays play in such a hard division, but you're not playing them as much, I feel like you're going to see, you know, three playoff teams from the American League East. And right now, I think at plus 130, that's pretty good value for the Rays to be one of those three teams that can get into the postseason.
Yeah, this is honestly, I like the Rays win total, but I also bet them to make the playoffs. And I think you can almost make the case that there's, you know, getting at that plus money that doesn't necessarily, sometimes you hear people talk as if that inherently makes the bet better. It's again, we're just working off of implied probabilities, but I think it's a little bit easier to conceptualize, especially if you're working off of other sources, like you mentioned FanGraphs and Pocota, you really can see that distinct difference there. So you go into an implied odds calculator, you know, you hit in that plus 130. It shows you, like you said, 43.5. Just very easily looking Pocota and FanGraphs, which we were just talking about how we think that they are a little bit low on the Rays. You know, year after year, they kind of shrink their, you know, their impact, the impact of their depth. And you're still seeing a 15-16% gap between what these projection systems have and what the books are implying. I really like that. I work off of, you know, I do some of my own stuff. I work a lot off of FanGraphs and Pocota and stuff like that. And so seeing those numbers there, that big of a gap, you honestly don't see that big of a gap on many different markets, like even available in baseball. So to have that for Rays to make the postseason, it's one of my favorite bets for all of baseball heading into the season, actually.
And FanGraphs and a lot of projection models do this, because this is how statistics work, is you see a lot of teams, they're projected to be, you know, right at their, like, their median, right? And so the lowest projected win total on FanGraphs is the Rockies at 64. Odds are there will be a team in the big leagues this year that wins less than 64 games. The highest projected win total is the Braves at 97. Odds are multiple teams will win 100 games in Major League Baseball this year. FanGraphs only has three teams projected to win 90 games. Like, we know there's going to be more than that. That's typically, you know, the bad teams will get really bad and the good teams will get really good. And so even a conservative projection model like that has the Rays at 87 wins, which, going back to their win total, would come in over. And not to say that FanGraphs is perfect, because clearly, like, they've been off about the Rays year to year. And so is Vegas. So maybe this is the year they get it right. By no means is this financial advice or gambling advice. We are just using this is the year it's all going to go terribly for the Rays. But to wrap up the show, we've got Jim on, and if we'll plug it right now, we'll plug it again at the end of the show. Follow Jim on Action Network. If you are a betting person, you will see some very interesting bets. You'll see, like, rebound totals on, like, for, like, a random NBA game or a WNBA game, or you don't really dabble into college basketball too much, I don't think.
Not a whole lot. I do some women's college hoop, but that's more, okay, like, big picture. The day-to-day is mostly NBA and WNBA this time of year.
So definitely, is it at Turvy Bets on Action Network?
It is, yeah.
All right, go give him a follow for sure. But I want to get into some of the more interesting futures bets that you can find on some of the major sports books having to do with the Rays. Jim, I know you had a few written down. I've got some that I want to throw out there as well, but I'll turn it over to you, some of these more interesting Rays futures that you can get.
For sure. I'll go with one that's about even money, and then I'll go with one long shot. So my two favorite ones, so they have these head-to-head home run markets, so you can bet either side of this, with the side being the player. So they have Randy Arozarena versus Jazz Chisholm home runs, who will have more this season. They have Randy Arozarena minus 140, which does imply that he is already the favorite, but I don't think a heavy enough favorite. Randy Arozarena kind of quietly is one of the more, like, healthy, reliable players in baseball, which I think, you know, if we talk about debunking, you know, what the, I feel like he would not have that in the first sentence of his bio when people normally talk about him, but he's a really reliable, healthy dude. And Jazz Chisholm is the exact opposite. I've been looking to fade Jazz Chisholm in almost all of my bets in this preseason. You can get his, like, kind of individual markets, but I really like pairing it up against Randy. And, you know, even if Jazz does stay healthy for the first time in his career, Randy is likely to also be healthy and potentially could outperform him, even if they're both healthy for a season. So getting Randy Arozarena to hit more homers than Jazz Chisholm around minus 140, I think, is at DraftKings. I really like that one. And then my long shot, I'd be curious what you guys think about this as well, because I get the feeling you guys are a little higher on the floor than the ceiling for this team. But I kind of like them to have the best, to be the number one seed in the American League. And I like that because instead of betting the division's about plus 650. You can get them to be the top team in the AL at plus 1700. So it's paying out almost three times as much, which almost seems like they're implying that the Central could have a team that could be in this race, that is not true. It's basically a two-horse race. The top teams almost certainly going to be coming from the East or the West. So if I can, you know, if the Rays are able to win the division, which, you know, again, it was listed at plus 650, which is about 13% implied. FanGraphs has them at 20% implied. So it seems like there's maybe a little bit of an edge there. If they're able to grab that division title, there's a decent chance they're going to be the number one seed in the AL. So getting them at plus 1700, which is something like a, you know, 5.5-6% chance implied, I really like that number. I also think that this is a team, just based on the way, you know, we've been talking here, I've been, you know, taking notes. I always listen to you guys and take notes for my betting advice. It's always good to have, like, the really inside scoop on teams. But kind of thinking about how this team is really going to be returning a lot of weapons midseason, you can do midseason betting as well, especially around the All-Star break. There'll kind of be a pause. They'll put a bunch of markets out there, like best record after the All-Star break. That could be a really fun way to bet the Rays. If they're in contention and it looks like they might make a move or two to kind of go for things, and, you know, check out the schedule, obviously, and stuff like that too. But if they're returning some arms, either to have the best record at the All-Star break or just to kind of, you know, if you're going to bet a Rays, you know, World Series ticket just because you want to have a little bit of fun, you know, do $5 on it. Don't do anything crazy, you know. But maybe that's the time to do it. Maybe the time is to wait until they start to bring some of those arms back, see if they've stayed healthy, see if those arms are still tracking to come back. And then it gives you, you know, information is king, right? So you have more information as the season goes along. So those are just a few of my bets I like and, you know, kind of betting approaches to the Rays this season.
I love that. The Randy Arozarena over Jazz Chisholm, I think the last 3 years Arozarena has surpassed Chisholm and Arozarena. Like last year, I think we really saw the power bat start to come around for Randy. He had a career high 23. His total is at 23.5 this year. I like that bet as it is at -110 just for him to go over. It's probably safer to go with him because of the uncertainty of Jazz Chisholm playing a full season and actually hitting more home runs, even if he does play a full season. I kind of like that bet a little more, but I would be right there for Arozarena over 23.5 home runs. We already talked about the making the playoffs at +130, but if you want better odds, just bet the Rays to lose in the wild card series at +400. They've done it the last 2 years. You know, they'll get there, that's for sure. You know what? If you want a little bit of insurance, bet them to lose in the divisional series at +550. You know, they're not getting past, they've only done that twice to get to the championship series. Honestly, not the worst bets in the world, but I probably wouldn't take those. One that I really like is Junior Caminero to win American League Rookie of the Year. I don't know. It's going to be based purely on like whether or not he plays enough in the big leagues. I think when he's up, he is going to be with Jackson Holliday. And that's a question with him. Like, where is he going to start? When's he going to come up? I think those are the two like most big league ready hitters. And Rookie of the Year is one of those awards where defense isn't considered as much, I don't think, as it is maybe for MVP nowadays. If you put up really good hitting numbers as a rookie, you're going to be right in the mix for Rookie of the Year. I know Evan Carter is another popular pick. He is a good player. I just don't.
Wyatt Langford. From Texas, yeah.
Yeah, like there are other candidates, but at +800, if Caminero is up, he is going to be with all of those guys in terms of hitting level. So I like that at +800. My like lotto ticket, and if there's no way I would have thought this a year ago, my lotto ticket, and I've seen this somewhere else as high as like +22,000, but I think DraftKings is offering it at +18,000. That's Josh Lowe to win American League MVP. hear me out. I think with the rule changes, we're at a place where unless it's Shohei Ohtani, you've got to steal bases to win an MVP award. Just because the guys at the top end are going to, you know, grab, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70 plus bags, right? If you're Ronald Acuna, Josh Lowe is going to get a chance to play every day this year. He can steal bags. He can hit for power. He's going to probably rack up a lot of doubles. It would take an insane breakout season, but that would be like the lotto ticket that I would want to hold on to. Given I looked at some of the other Rays odds and none of them really seemed to have enough value in it for me because no Ray has ever won MVP. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but if I'm going to pick one guy, that wouldn't be my pick to do it, but at those odds it would be. The last one I have is Yandy Diaz to lead the American League in hits at +4,000. That's lead Major League Baseball in hits. He finished 11th last year and he only played 137 games. I think he had exactly 600 plate appearances. It requires Yandy to stay healthy, which isn't always the case, but he plays through a lot and had the American League batting title last year. It's not too far of a stretch to think that he could lead the league in hits if he plays every day. And so +4,000, I liked that one a lot. And then I had Randy Rosarena over 23.5 home runs down as well. Darby, do you have anything?
With that Josh Lowe one, I actually really love that because I had to look up the tweet from Ryan Bass. So at the end of the season, right, so Josh Lowe had 20 home runs, 30 doubles, 30 stolen bases, right? He is only Ronald Acuña Jr., Francisco Lindor, and Julio Rodriguez had a similar level of home run, double, stolen base. The home run and stolen base is a very flashy in the voting odds. Feels unlikely, but you know.
I mean, we talk implied odds. That's saying he just has to win the MVP less than 0.5% of all of the simulations of the season that we land on. So, yeah, you're talking to the extreme, anyways.
I mean, and if you're picking an MVP, yeah,
he has the type of skill set that you could see getting a lot of votes because of that, like home run, power, speed, that type of stuff. You know, like we saw with like Acuña, it's. If he has an outburst of like 30 home runs and steals like 50 bags, that's not like that's it. That's you were talking about like the 80-90 percentile outcomes. Those can sometimes hit. So like that is one of those. If for a very fun wild lotto ticket, I actually really love that one. Cameron Arrow was one that I also was going to bring up. Was just like as rookie of the year, he has extremely flashy tools. The tools that would absolutely win a rookie of the year, even in a shorter period, right? He's a guy with prestigious power, absolutely somebody that could like rattle off a huge hot streak. And depending upon when Wyatt Langford comes up, depending upon if Evan Carter continues his very hot start to his career, depending upon when Jackson Holliday comes up and how well he does when he comes up, I could see it not being a full season. It could be just like even like a three-quarter season or even half season of like really hotness from any of those guys. I think those four are really Carter's, I think, probably your odds-on favorite. I haven't checked because of the fact that he's starting the season. You know he's going to be in the majors, and you don't know that for Holliday or Langford or Caminero. But those are four guys that really could – do a lot of impact, win that award without a huge amount of time.
Yeah, I agree. I think Holliday on DraftKings is the odds on favorite ahead of Carter. And I don't know if I agree with that because,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm not as high on Evan Carter, but like you said, he's going to be on the team. He's going to play opening day and he's probably the only one at the top. Spot. Yeah,
and those awards they'll keep up. Those you can almost have up every day. Like some of the win totals, those will go kind of in and out. The division stuff's usually up. The player stuff is kind of a one-time thing. But the you know MVP, Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, that stuff will be up all season. So that's stuff you can kind of keep an eye on as the season goes along as you get information here and there.
And I mean a few others like. I don't know, maybe you want to do Josh Lowe or Yandy Diaz to lead the league in doubles. Maybe that's something. I don't know. There's tons of stuff, and we could go down a rabbit hole. Even though we're not like – we have no betting partners. We're not a gambling podcast. If you do choose to bet, do it legally and responsibly.
Very responsibly.
Yeah, very – please responsibly. Jim, any other final thoughts on the Rays, on what you've kind of seen from afar? Your thoughts on where the team is right now and what they're going to go up against the American League East this year?
I mean, in all honesty, because I am doing a lot of NBA and WNBA for action where I am right now, I get a lot of my Rays news from this podcast. So
oh, gosh.
I will just say that it is very fun to listen to you guys. You guys are awesome. And it keeps you informed, even if you're only, you know, tuning in every now and then. I love not to gas you guys up too much, but it's a very fun way to stay in tune with the team that I was you know covering there for a bit. So
well then tell me this, who's gonna win the NBA finals?
Nuggets.
Yeah, it does feel like it's headed back in that direction. And then WNBA, who do you like this year going into the season?
I mean, it's hard to pick against the Aces, but I will say Darby, Seattle Storm are looking awesome. And I think the market's sleeping on them. If you're looking at this from a betting perspective again, I think they're underrated right now. And if they can talk Gabby Williams into coming back from France, I think they have a very legit chance to win the title. That is a really fun team that just like mesh, like, you know, those basketball teams that just mesh so well, like they have like a perfect player each position that fits perfectly with another. I think they're going to be really, really, really good. So that Seattle Storm team should be fun to watch all season.
Awesome. Well, make sure to get on Action Network and follow at Turvy Betts. Are you at Turvy Betts on X as well?
I am. Yep. I kept it the same to make it easy for folks.
Gotcha. So make sure to follow Jim. Jim, we might have to make this. We might have to get you back on regularly, get you back in the rotation, and do some, you know, like some of the betting in the season as well. We can talk about those odds. But I think this was a really good discussion to kind of frame where the Rays are at. Especially they've made another addition. Maybe that changes the outlook. Maybe it doesn't. But yeah, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Raise Your Voice. If you like what we do, make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcast to make sure that every new episode is downloaded directly to your device. We are also now on YouTube. Just head on over to youtube.com/raiseyourvoice. We will go live for almost every episode on the Raise Your Voice YouTube and the D-Rays Bay X account. As always, make sure to head on over to draysbay.com to check out all of that great Rays content. If you really like what we do, you can go to patreon.com/raiseyourvoice and become a member. We also just dropped a new episode of Who's on Worst, where we reviewed the Benchwarmers. Man, that was a tough watch, but it's a great listen. So if you go back, it's on this podcast feed. You can listen to Ashley, Darby, and myself talk about the Benchwarmers for hopefully the last time I ever have to talk about that movie. But yeah, check that out as well. Once again, thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you next week.